Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's political podcast. I'm Laura Prendergast and I'm joined by Jane Forsyth and Katie Balls. Mark Carney was on the Today programme this morning talking about no-deal Brexit, and here's what he had to say.
And what we have done, and I think it's important to underscore this, is we have made sure that the banks have the capital that they need, have the liquidity that they need, and that we have the contingency plans in place so that if there were to be a no-deal Brexit, and not just a no-deal Brexit, but a no-deal Brexit without any transition, so something that truly is by accident, because it's absolutely in the interest of the European Union and the United Kingdom to have a transition to whatever deal.
Right, so you're saying quite clearly that a no-deal Brexit would be a disaster.
It is highly undesirable.
James, what did you make of it?
I think there is Mark Carney's warning against no deal, which is not a surprise. I think one of the things that is interesting is he's also saying that the Bank of England has done its job, e.g. the banks would be able to survive that scenario. There's no need, you know, you're not going to see a bank run, or you're not going to see a bank failure in the event of no deal. I think he's also made the point previously that the European Union is not actually, the European financial system is not actually particularly well prepared for unplugging itself from the City of London and the dangers that that would cause. I think, though, given what happened during the referendum and the role that Carney played, he's always going to become, whenever he talks about Brexit and no deal and the economic consequences, he is always going to elicit a reaction from people saying, oh, you're scaremongering, you're this or you're that. I think that actually Mark Carney has got a valuable role to play in the next few months, which is in pointing out to people the risks on both sides of a channel of a chaotic no-deal Brexit and what that would mean. You know, a simple question of all of these derivative contracts in the City of London, you know, what would happen to them? What would happen to the European financial system if you remove that plumbing?
And I think what's interesting too is Mark Carney is regarded by some as perhaps, I mean, I wouldn't call him this exactly, but as a Remainer, as someone who in the EU referendum campaign was very much on the side of Remain and who predicted things that just didn't come true. And I think what's interesting when it comes to the no-deal warnings, so he suggested that the Bank of England had perhaps war-gamed a no-deal scenario, and although the banks are equipped to, you know, get through that, it would mean, he said, things like property prices dropping by a third, it would probably mean a recession, and it would mean interest rates going up to potentially 4%. Now, I thought we've been quick to dismiss this. I think Ian Duncan-Smith, the Conservative MP and Brexiteer, has said this is Project Fear all over again. And I do think lots of people say, well, you've told us this stuff before and it didn't happen. I think what's interesting about no deal and whether or not it is a okay idea, a good idea, or a far from ideal idea, there's actually division in the Brexiteer ranks about that. There are some Brexiteers who say no deal is absolutely fine, don't call it that, call it a world trade Brexit. But there are others, and there are many of them in Vote Leave, who don't think no deal is at all a good idea in the short term. And I actually think you're much better parking yourself in something like the EEA, so you can get to a point that you can adequately prepare to lend you no deal in a couple of years' time. So I think lots of people will say his warnings don't mean much. We have a boy who cried wolf situation, but that there is definitely a group of Brexiteers who don't think crashing out on a no-deal scenario in March is actually a good idea.
There is an irony here, though, because for all the ire and rage that Mark Carney attracts from some Brexiteers, the Bank of England have actually been the people arguing that when it comes to the City of London and financial services, they must be regulated in the UK, not simply following European regulations. Mark Carney was very strong straight after the referendum in saying, look, the EEA, the supposed Norway option, couldn't work for the UK in the long term, because you couldn't run the City of London cutting and pasting EU directives on services. In a row between the Treasury and the Bank of England, it was the Bank of England saying, hang on a second, don't give up that autonomy over, don't agree to follow EU rules on financial services, because the City of London is too global a player to do that. So while, as Carney might draw a certain reaction from some Brexiteers, the Bank of England has actually been relatively clear-sighted about the fact that, you know, if you're going to, that the City of London can't be run, you know, simply cutting and pasting EU rules that we would have no say in making.
In an article published in 20 newspapers around Europe today, Michelle Barnier has said that the UK's Brexit proposals threaten the future of the European Union. James, what did you make of his article?
I mean, this is the classic Barnier argument that you can't separate the four freedoms. A, not only because the EU is committed to the four freedoms, but there's when you talk to people in Brussels, there is this logic. They say, look, Schengen, the kind of borderless arrangement, is in trouble. That gets suspended on a relatively regular basis by one country or another. The Eurozone obviously has problems and needs reforms. The one thing that the EU can point to that is a success is the single market. So don't allow the Brits to kind of tamper with that on the way out of a door. I do think, though, that the timing of this piece is interesting. As Katie wrote yesterday on Coffee House, it is striking that Barnier has kind of felt the need to do this piece now. And I don't think this means that he's... I don't think this proves that he's in a kind of a panic or anything like that. But I think it is him trying to say, as Theresa May, you know, on the day that Theresa May meets Emmanuel Macron, Barnier is trying to say, hang on a second, I'm still in charge here of the European response to these British proposals.
And Katie, do we have any sense yet of how Theresa May's visit to Emmanuel Macron's villa is going?
Well, yesterday, as we were hearing news that the European Commission just, you know, thought it was a good time to run this article in 20 newspapers in Europe, there also came an announcement from Emmanuel Macron's official spokesperson, just making it very clear that even though Theresa May is coming to his villa today, this does not count as an official part of the negotiations. This does not substitute in any way for Barnier's negotiations, and reiterating the fact that Emmanuel Macron has full faith in Michel Barnier to do that part of it. So you did feel like there was I don't think it was that surprising that they would say this, but you did feel the timing meant there was quite a concentrated effort to suggest that May and her minister's Brexit tour wasn't wielding the results that you might have thought it was by the progress in terms of these meetings. So I imagine they will talk about Brexit, but I think everything is being done to play down the idea of this being any kind of breakthrough. So maybe they'll just end up, you know, sipping some rosé when they run out of conversation on that front.
I think it's quite interesting that there's no press conference today. I'm told they're not going to be statements issued afterwards or anything like that. They are. I think this is, they're trying to kind of keep this very much as a kind of catch up between two leaders behind closed doors, rather than going into great detail about what they're talking about.
And just finally, job vacancies posted on a government website as part of Esther McVeigh's initiative to offer summer employment for young people have been advertised as paying as little as £2 an hour. Katie, do you think £2 an hour is a shocking amount for a summer job or perfectly reasonable?
I don't think it's great, and I think actually the government have tried to row back on this massively. So again, I think this is incompetence rather than ill will. So Esther McVeigh, I think she said this in an interview quite a few times, that she thought, you know, youngsters these days didn't... She was sad that they didn't have as many weekend jobs perhaps in her time or in previous decades. And finally, you know, it's landed and they have this website. Once it was pointed out that the salaries in some of these jobs were below the, you know, minimum age for 16 or 17 year olds, they were taken down. And they said, actually, the problem was we weren't vetting them all one by one. I think there is a loophole where you can offer, you know, a very paltry amount if it comes with some benefits, such as, you know, some accommodation or free meals. So I think that was how they were getting around it. So I don't think it's a brilliant start to their scheme.
I think this is the question, which is, when is work experience something that is clearly beneficial to the person doing the work experience? And when does it just become a way of getting kind of cheap labour in? I think there is also another thing which is worth noting here, but already family businesses are allowed to employ people in the family for way below the minimum wage. I also think this is very Esther McVeigh. When she was at DWP as the Minister of State for Employment in the coalition government, she was very keen on all of these schemes that got people who are on unemployment benefit in doing work, even if they weren't being paid for that work, or, you know, the argument was that they were being paid via their benefits for that work. I think she is one of these people who think that kind of the discipline of going out to work every day actually has a kind of beneficial effect in and of itself.
And Katie, I mean, do you think summer jobs are beneficial?
I think in general they are, like, as in, I think most of my friends who did have summer jobs found it was a benefit. I mean, and they're not particularly glamorous. I think my first job was as a waitress. I think I was actually not fired, but I wasn't brought back from any shifts. This incident, I think, when I misheard what a couple had ordered, instead of a pint of beer, I got them a pint of milk. So that wasn't good. I had more luck when I worked at Summerfield. But I do think you learn something which you don't learn in a school setting or by just, you know, going straight to university. So I do think she has a point on that. But I also think the point would be better made if you actually paid them, you know, a reasonable sum of money.
Thank you, Katie, and thank you, James. And if you'd like to hear more about the possibility of a no-deal Brexit, do come along to our event on the 26th of September. Andrew Neil will be talking to a special guest panel about whether or not we are heading for a no-deal.
It's at Euston Square in London, and tickets can be found at www.spectator.co.uk/Brexit event. Thanks for listening, and do join us again on Monday.